This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. When Juliet asked the question, what's in a name, she was, of course, referring to Romeo's last name, Montague, and went on to state that which we call a rose by any other name would smell as sweet. Let's fast forward 400 or so years and ask the question again, what's in a name? That which we call a bobcat by any other name would smell as sweet. But the bobcats didn't smell so sweet, and Charlotte's NBA team is hoping that there really is something in a name, and that's why they've taken back their original name and in the process are hoping to recapture the magic of the original Charlotte Hornets. I know my analogy is a bit of a stretch, but it is essentially what the team is banking on with the return of the Hornets' name. It's a rebranding, and the name change is just part of an effort we'll spend the hour talking about with Fred Whitfield, President and Chief Operating Officer and alternate governor of the Charlotte Hornets. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Mike.
Nice to see you again.
Great to see you.
Rich Cho is general manager of the team. Thank you for joining us. And Pete Coeli is executive vice president and chief sales and marketing officer, on whose shoulders much of the rebranding effort, I'm sure, has fallen. Thank you for being here as well.
Thanks for having us.
By the way, our guest tonight will be participating in the Leaders in Action lecture series to talk about the team's rebranding tonight at 5:30 at Queen's University of Charlotte. It is open, but you have to register in advance, and you can get details on that at our website. At WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. I'm not going to ask you where Michael Jordan is this morning, but where is he? I have never heard the title alternate governor. What is that?
No, every NBA team has a governor, which is which is a majority owner.
Okay.
And every team's allowed to have two alternate governors that go to the Board of Governors meetings twice a year. And vote on literally how our league is run. And so for the last 8 years, I've served as the alternate governor, one of the alternate governors for our team.
Okay.
And Curtis Polk, our vice chairman, is the other alternate governor, and Michael Jordan's our governor.
So what's it like to breathe that rarefied air?
Well, it's great.
All those rich people sitting in the room.
it's so interesting because over the last 8 years, the makeup of the ownership group has changed dramatically. There are probably 8 or 9 new owners, and just the direction our league is going with our new commissioner, Adam Silver, in place, following the footsteps of David Stern, who took our league to a new height. It's just been so interesting to see how policy is made, why certain changes are made, why rules are changed, and how we play our game. And then also to be involved in the conversations about things like our TV deal and, you know, where that's headed in the future. And just the part technology has played and how we all talk about as a group, you know, what part technology plays in our successes. And so it's a great gathering of, as you said, very wealthy people that are trying to create policy that will have a landscape that small market teams like us can be competitive on the floor and also run a competitive business.
You know, you say we're a small market, but we were just announced, I think, over the weekend as being the 16th largest city in America.
Well, you know, it's a small market from a professional sports franchise.
Because of TV?
Well, because of the TV DMA and the households that are able to get our games. You know, we're very fortunate now that we aren't considered just a Charlotte team. We consider ourselves a regional team.
Okay.
When I got here 8 years ago, our games were in less than 1 million households in North and South Carolina. Now we're in 3.5 million households. So when you look at that DMA, it really heightens the visibility that our team gets both on the floor and in the community.
Talk to me about the role of technology. You brought up technology. What things, technologically speaking, are basketball organizations doing today?
Well, you know, having the fan be more engaged in the game is one thing that our league is really focused on. Our fans want to be engaged. They want to engage with our scoreboard, which is very important. They're communicating with a lot of their friends who may or may not be at the game. So one of the things that we did several years ago when we hosted the Democratic National Convention was try to get as far ahead from a technological standpoint as we could with Time Warner Cable Arena, installing a distributed antenna system, upgrading our Wi-Fi access. Mm-hmm. All those type things are very important now in the game presentation, and we want our fans to be heavily engaged. We want them to be able to communicate both internally and externally.
Is there a second screen experience within the arena? If you brought your iPad or your Surface tablet or your iPhone or whatever, can you Can you get information extra that while the game is going on other than what's on the scoreboard?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. We launched an app about 3 years ago. I think we've got about 20,000 people that are currently on it. And used it as an opportunity for fans to interact in-game, you know, with the live game experience. But that's become critical. You know, it's difficult to get people to leave their homes and leave their 60-inch big screens and come down for a live sports experience. So you need to give them what they have at home when they're in the arena.
Wow. People start bringing their 60-inch screens with them, that's going to be a problem.
It seems like it's getting closer to that every day. I've seen some of those tablets, and they're pretty big.
The return of the Hornets' name has been a long journey. We had some fans on here, some Hornets Bring Back the Bees fans on here a couple of years ago who were just ardent about their desire that this happen. And it finally did happen. Was it a slow and arduous process from the team's point of view? Is this something that the team wanted to have happen, open to having happen, but not really sold on the idea? Talk about the journey.
It was longer than most people would think, but probably not long enough for us because there was so much to do that window almost seemed condensed. But it was really – when we step on the court in October as the Hornets, it'll be almost a full 2 years from when we started pursuing the name. So obviously there was some excitement around it. There was some anecdotal information out there that the fans wanted the team name back, but we didn't spend a lot of time on it until New Orleans decided to relinquish the name. Once that we became aware of that, we began this process. That was way back in October, November-ish of 2012. And at that point in time, we decided to embark on a research project because we wanted this to be a really data-driven decision. And not so much to maybe change the name, but how actionable is it? How will people respond to it? Will they buy more tickets? Would you watch more games? Would you purchase more merchandise? How do you feel about the colors? You know, how does the name resonate? What do you think about the court? All these gather as much information as we could so we could make some really intelligent decisions moving forward. But that process began almost 2 years ago, and then it was a series of rollouts from there. The announcement that we were going to pursue, Fred went to, I think it was in Vegas, where the Board of Governors voted unanimously to bring the name back. And then I'm sure we'll get into this, but rollout after rollout of colors and brand and merchandise and the court. In the uniform, so it's been a lengthy process.
Rich Cho's been very quiet here so far this morning because we haven't really gotten into his area of interest yet. But you're the general manager, and if I understand your role correctly, you deal a lot with the players and with player deals and with trades and things like that. Does it matter from a player's point of view whether they come here as a Bobcat or they come here as a Hornet? Does it matter that when the Hornets were here, we had the highest attendance in the league, and we made stars out of unlikely people like Muggsy Bogues? Does it matter?
Yeah, I think it definitely matters. If you talk to our players, you can kind of feel the energy that they have behind the name change. And when our new players come in, like P.J. Hairston came in this summer, Brian Roberts we signed as a free agent, and one of the things they talked about at the press conference was the name change and also the old Hornets and, the fans behind the old Hornets, and they're excited about the name change. And I know our current players last year, they're excited about the name change, the colors, the court. There's a lot of energy in the building.
Are they excited about the name change? Because there's such baggage connected to the Bobcat name. I mean, we had the worst record in the league a couple of years ago, and it kind of turned around, thanks to you, in large part, I'm told. It kind of turned around in the last season of the Bobcats. If the Bobcats could have continued that momentum, would there have been baggage attached to the name anymore?
Well, I just think it's, you're turning over a new leaf, and people remember, especially the older guys, they remember, hey, how much excitement there was when it was the Hornets and Larry Johnson.
Do they really remember that? Because, I mean, they were probably in diapers back then.
Well, one thing about players these days, a lot of them do their homework. Mm-hmm. And they follow historically what's going on in the league. And they'll talk about, even though they might not have seen them play, they talk about Larry Johnson and Alonzo Mourning and Muggsy Bogues. Del Curry's around the team, so they
Kelly
know him
Trabuca.
A little bit.
Yeah,
Kelly Trabuca. So, and the Hornets led the league in attendance here for a number of years, and so people remember that.
The brand never died. I mean, I think that's important to note. As a legacy brand, the Charlotte Hornets brand was always one of the top five performers in the NBA from a merchandise standpoint. So a lot of these guys, they look at it as almost a throwback brand that's now been rejuvenated. But there was a keen awareness of that Charlotte Hornets brand even after it left the market.
Well, let's talk about that, because the merchandise, the Charlotte Hornets logo merchandise, was still a big seller. I don't know how it even got on the market, Ed, because it wasn't a team anymore. It was the New Orleans Hornets.
Right.
But people preferred to buy the thing that said Charlotte Hornets,
yeah,
with the other B, et cetera. This whole you're bringing back the name, you're bringing back Hugo, the mascot, you're bringing back the idea of the hive, you're bringing back the colors of the team, which were very big in the 80s. You're bringing back the bug, a little more fierce than he was. But you're not bringing back everything exactly as it was. Why not?
Well, I think that goes back to the research that we did. We wanted to really find out what resonated with our fans. And you've got a process of, you know, taking those original Hornets fans, galvanizing them with the Bobcats fans that were developed over the last 9 or 10 years. Mm-hmm. And then, again, we've got a relatively transient market as well. So you've got a lot of people that have come in over the last few years. So I think you've got to take some of the old traditions that still resonate with our fans, but you've also got to develop some new ones because we're bringing a lot of new people into that arena every day.
Was it tricky because there were a significant number of Bobcats fans who had invested in a significant amount of merchandise, and now that merchandise is a museum piece. Was that a consideration? Did you hear from them as you were considering this or even announcing the name change?
You know, as we did our research, you know, what we found is that 80%+ of the people in our market, including our current season ticket holders and sponsors, really want us to go back and grab the Hornets name back. And that's really what led us to our final decision to pull the trigger. We knew it would be a huge financial investment on our part to completely rebrand. But we did see it as a way that we could really really marry our current Bobcats fans to the old Hornets fans and grab a lot of the equity that had been built, good equity that had been built by the prior Hornets franchise, not only on the court but also in the community. One of the things that the prior Hornets franchise really was praised for is just being so involved in the community and doing great things to help those in need. That was certainly one of the initiatives that when Michael Jordan bought our team, that he really stressed that we wanted to do and be engaged in. And so for us to be able to, you know, grab fans not only in Charlotte but throughout the Carolinas that used to make the drive in and help lead the league in attendance for 9 straight years, to be able to have those fans that love the NBA brand, many of them were very, very disappointed when that brand left Charlotte and moved to New Orleans, to be able to grab them back and marry them to the fans that had really fallen in love with our Bobcats brand as Rich and our basketball operations team moved our team on the floor in the right direction. It was just such a unique opportunity that we wanted to take advantage of, and our fans and our community spoke loudly, and we listened.
You're not just rebranding the team. You're actually rebranding the Hornets brand, because the original B, and it's this guy, I was thinking about this yesterday, the original B was this warm and fuzzy B. Smile on his face. He just looked like you want to go up and hug him, you know? Just something you don't want to do with a B normally. But that was an innocent time. It was our first foray into professional sports, and we were kind of an innocent. You could go to the games, and it didn't matter if they could even throw the ball. It didn't matter. They got standing ovations. Well, things have changed. So the B now is a little more fierce. He's ready to sting. And I'm sure that's by design. And I want to talk about that in the next segment as we come back, because it's not the same old Hornets. It's a whole fresh look at the Hornets situation. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Blumenthal Performing Arts, a 2012 Tony Award musical, Once, an original Broadway experience about the power of music to connect all of us. September 23rd in the Belk Theater. Tickets at 704-372-1000. And Nexen Pruitt, 190 lawyers helping companies meet business challenges in court and at the deal table from Charlotte and 7 other Carolina locations. Next challenge, next level. Nexen Pruitt. Well, how does a biologist win the Nobel Prize for Chemistry? That's one of the things we'll find out when we're joined by Dr. Martin Chalfie, who won the prize in 2008. He's in town to be honored by Charlotte's ECHO Foundation, and he will join us to talk about molecular biology and the roles science and scientific research play in our world today and in our future. and how chance, the influence of others, and pig-headedness helped him succeed. That's tomorrow at 9.
Student achievement.
The Common Core.
Charter schools.
The landscape for public education continues to change.
Join WFAE for a community forum to address the state of public education in the Charlotte region.
Top education leaders and classroom professionals will share their views, and you can join the discussion in this WFAE public conversation.
Tuesday evening, September 16th at the UNC Charlotte Center City location.
Details and RSVP at WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. Mike Collins. We're talking about something that doesn't happen very often in a city or in a franchise, and that is the rebranding of a professional team, in this case the Charlotte Hornets. Fred Whitfield is with us. He's the president and COO of the Hornets. Rich Cho is the general manager. Pete Iguelli is executive vice president and chief of sales and marketing. He's responsible in large part for rolling out the brand. We talked about the warm and fuzzy B of old versus the ready to sting bee today. You made that and several other changes. Why? Why not bring the bee back?
Well, I think the first thing we did was make sure that brand, the original brand, was preserved and available to our customers, because we knew that there was a lot of loyalty to that brand. But at the same time, you know, this is the new generation of the Hornets, and it was important for us to establish a new identity. And I think we spent a lot of time digging into the DNA of what that really meant, looking at the traits of a Hornet, looking at the history of Charlotte, looking at where the name came from, to kind of develop that new brand. And also, you know, the team has a new owner, and there's some attributes that people would associate with him as well. And we wanted to make sure that was all captured in this new brand.
It's pretty clever, the B. He's got a little basketball built in to his abdomen, I guess you'd
He's definitely more aggressive. I think you used the word fierce. I think that's a very apt description. We wanted to put him in an attacking mode. Uh-huh. Hornets are known for protecting. They swarm, and those are all attributes that we want our basketball team to have as well. So we thought it was a perfect combination for the brand.
So now that the Hornets are the Hornets again, do you then get? Do you then own the old Hornets logo and paraphernalia? So now you have two sets of paraphernalia to merchandise.
Well, actually, we do. You know, the NBA has protected their original brand through its legacy line, and if you walk in our team store, you'll see a lot of the old paraphernalia for sale. But you'll also see the new branded merchandise, which we were very, very fortunate that we could partner with Nike and Jordan Brand and the NBA to really create this new complete identity system. So it was really more than just going out and establishing a logo. We wanted to establish our word marks. We wanted to establish our primary and secondary logos. We wanted to, you know, really recreate what Hugo looked like and really bring him up to date. We wanted to recreate what the Honeybees will look like, our court design. We wanted to try and create a very, very unique basketball court, such that if you happen to see it on TV with no branding on it, you would know it's the home court of the Charlotte Hornets. Right. Our uniforms, we wanted to, once we got our data back from our fans, and the purple and teal seemed to resonate still very much with them, you know, how could we create different uniforms that would still pay homage to the prior Hornets organization and brand, but also bring it more up to date and have it be more relevant and really, you know, speak to more about what our owner feels and have him be engaged in the process. And so it was quite a lengthy process to really create all those things within one system.
It's got to be an enormous undertaking. Do you wake up in the middle of the night thinking, I wonder what I forgot?
Yes, on opening, still, and still do.
On opening night, some bobcat thing will show up that you've forgotten about?
We engaged a number of our counterparts in the organization. We had a team of four, myself, Fred, Seth Bennett, our VP, Senior VP of Marketing, and Josh Kramer, our VP of Marketing, to really conference with the league and with Nike every Tuesday for almost a year to kind of work through this process. So we felt pretty confident that we had the majority of things covered, but even beyond that, you know, we established a committee system in our organization and engaged probably another 70 or 80 of our colleagues to work through this process so that we did have everything covered. Because as Fred noted, it really was a very integrated process all the way from how we're going to operate in the community, what's the building going to look like, how are we going to treat our employees, how does this, you know, transcend down to our customers. There was just a number of things that needed to be managed.
I mean, so much of the team's success or failure rests on Rich Rich Cho's shoulders, and of course the coaches, and I know there are other people involved behind the scenes, but you're the guy that you're the hit man. I mean, you're the guy that we're gonna hit you if things go wrong. So as you look around the table here, and you look at all the things that have to be done to change the name of the team, aren't you glad that you're not involved?
Yeah, you could say that. I mean, these guys do a great job, and they're very good at what they do. We love the name. We, meaning basketball operations and the players, love the name change, love the new colors, the new logos. I mean, they did a terrific, terrific job.
Let's talk about some things here. The uniforms are changing, and there's going to be three different uniforms. Is that unusual?
At the moment, no, not unusual, not by league standards. Okay. Obviously, home and away, right. and most teams have an alternate. And then there's obviously opportunities to potentially expand that line as we move forward, throwback pieces and such. But that uniform piece was critical. I mean, it really needed to look right. We wanted it to be something that our basketball operations department was comfortable with, our players would be excited to put on. There was a lot of research that went into just that piece alone.
When the original Hornets came to town, that's one of the landmark things that happened that put them on the map as a team was the uniform, obviously designed by Alexander Julian, with the purple and the teal and the pinstripes and the pleats and the baggy shorts and a couple of other identifying things. You're not going in that direction. Why not?
We didn't think our players would be comfortable in those short shorts.
They
this time
short.
Around.
They weren't short.
Oh, I know. No, it was really, Fred really pointed this out. It was more about designing a complete identity system. So we couldn't look at the uniforms or the court or any piece of this in a vacuum. It had to all come from this original research project and the design around the complete identity system. So it was everything was kind of designed together to make sure that it was as integrated as possible, and that's why we went in a different direction. And I think the other piece is when you have a resource like Nike at your disposal – which most organizations don't.
And Jordan Brands.
Correct, exactly. So
where did
through
that
our
come
owner.
From, Jordan Brands?
I'm not sure where they developed that.
You know, it's pretty interesting. You know, I worked at Nike twice, once in Nike Pro Basketball, and my second stint was in Jordan Brand. And Jordan Brand really spun out of what originally started as just one Air Jordan shoe that came out every All-Star break that Michael wore for the next year. And now the brand has grown into a $2+ billion business.
He's the Apple of shoes, isn't he?
He is. I mean, he's the one basketball player or athlete that's been able to take his brand and have it resonate throughout the world. And that brand has become a global brand. Now, you know, the Jordan Brand shoe is not only in basketball, but Derek Jeter wears it in baseball. You've got numerous football players wearing it, and it has become a global brand that now has, 15 to 16 young NBA players like a Chris Paul and Blake Griffin that wear that brand to keep it alive.
Do you think these new uniforms will have the impact on the, because it really changed the whole style of the NBA, those original uniforms back in the 80s. I mean, it was like an eye-opening moment. Will these new uniforms have the same impact, do you think?
I don't know if you can recreate that. I mean, obviously it was the first team ever, professional sports team, to play in Charlotte. I thought they did a great job with that. But I think we've created our own identity. And based on the response to date, it's been overwhelmingly favorable towards the uniform.
The court, and I told you this before we started, the court is magnificent. I mean, it really is. The design of the actual surface is magnificent. Talk about that. What have you done for people who haven't seen it?
You know, again, the hope was that we'd be able to create something that really spoke about what our brand meant. And we felt if we could have a design that had the cell built into the actual court design, it would really represent part of what our research told us that the Hornet.
When you say cell, you mean the honeycomb?
The honeycomb on the floor. Mm-hmm. And we were very nervous whether it would actually pass the TV test that the league runs every court design through. Yeah. When it did pass, we were thrilled because we knew that it would be very, very unique.
It's interesting. Television, for people who don't know about TV, TV does not like tight patterns. It gets in the way of the scan lines, and it's a lot of technical stuff. But if you see somebody whose shirt is doing weird things as they move, that's because it's interfering with the scan lines on television. And when you put a honeycomb on a court and you take an extremely wide shot, which they do on television for basketball, there's a chance that the court could have a movement of its own that would interfere with watching the game. It doesn't do that.
Right. No, it doesn't. And then you also have to integrate the uniforms and the color of the uniforms and how they blend in from a television perspective. And so, you know, to Pete's point, you know, our goal from the very beginning was to design a brand identity system that easily integrated together with all pieces. And so when you see Hugo running around the building, it should integrate mm-hmm. with the court design. It should connect with our uniforms.
So is the honeycomb built into the wood or is it painted on the surface? I'm just curious about that.
I think it's more of a stain than anything else.
Okay.
So not built directly into the surface.
Does it remind me a little bit of the parquet look, although it's not the same design, but the parquet effect of the Celtics?
Yeah, and that was the goal. I mean, something that would really resonate. I think the most important part for us with the court was, you know, we've had a number of people that have walked in that building over the last 9 years. They need to realize that they're walking into a different experience when they come into that building in October, and the court is the centerpiece of that. As soon as they walk through those gates and they stare down at that court, we want them to feel like they're walking into a different environment.
Mm-hmm. You know, and one of the things that made us very proud is that, you know, one of our, you know, very, very loyal founding level partners in Novant wanted to share that court design with us and proudly wanted to put their name on that court. Mm-hmm. And so for us to be able to roll it out and have a great partner, be a part of that court that'll, again, be seen in 3.5 million households every night.
There is probably no question that the minute the Hornets step on the court, as the new Hornets, that this will bring new people in, more people in, revitalized interest in the team because it's a new beginning. It's a new day, essentially. What does that kind of feeling do for players and coaches? Because these are guys. These guys aren't in high school anymore. They're professionals. Does it really matter? Does it affect them?
I think it matters a lot. You know, players around the league talk. A lot of them are friends. They're close. They know. They have friends of friends. And I think it definitely matters. And, you know, this has been a great free agent destination the last couple of years. Last year we were able to sign Al Jefferson and bring him in, and he made third team All-NBA. And this year, there was a big restricted free agent that wanted to sign with us and signed an offer sheet, Gordon Hayward. Now, Utah matched that offer, but just the fact that he was willing to come here was a big step in the right direction. And then we got Lance Stevenson to sign, and he's an all-star caliber player, and we're excited about him. So I think it definitely matters. You know, guys around the league talk, and we've got a great coaching staff led by Steve Clifford, and so the outlook's promising.
One of the comments that visiting teams used to make about the old Hive when the Hornets were first starting out was that they couldn't hear themselves because it was so loud in there, because the fans were just boisterous the whole darn game. That certainly has an impact on a visiting team, it would seem to me. Do you hope to be able to recreate that?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean, the guys feed off the energy that's in the building. So the more energy and more excitement that the fans can give in the building, the players just feed off of that. And so it'll be great.
Mm-hmm. You know, we've had a great off-season, selling season. You know, we've added almost 3,500 new full-season ticket holders this off-season.
Is that, do you think, because of the rebranding?
Well, I think it's a combination of
– Or the success of
the season. I think it's a combination of a lot of things. It's sort of a perfect storm. You know, we've got a playoff-caliber team. We've got a great coaching staff. We had a great draft. We had a great free agency period. And then just, again, grabbing the equity from the old Hornets franchise and the rebranding. And so the energy level in the building is going to be heightened, certainly, when we open the season. And our goal, and we aren't afraid to say this, is to get that feeling that used to be in the old Hive. I was a season ticket holder with the Hornets. I knew what it felt like to get in that building. Michael played in that environment and has always said it was probably the toughest building for him to go in and perform well. We're trying to recreate that same environment to hopefully give our guys the feel of a home court advantage. And our fans have responded, you know, all summer. Our renewal rate is very high. We've got 90% of our fans from last year coming back, and they're all anxious and excited to get the season started.
Well, the Bobcats made the playoffs last year. Was that a surprise to you? Did you think at some point in the middle of the season we're going to go to the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, as the season went along and our team started playing better and we We saw how great the coaching staff was, led by Coach Clifford and Coach Ewing. And then, you know, Big Al started playing better because he started the season with an injury. So as our team got healthy and started playing better and started creating an identity, we felt like, hey, we've got a real chance of making the playoffs.
Is much of that team back?
Yeah, a lot of it's back. We've got five new players. Brian Roberts is our backup point guard. He's new. Lance Stevenson and P.J. Harrison at the wing position. They're new. Marvin Williams at power forward. He's new. And then we also drafted Noah Vonleh from Indiana, and he's new.
How do you explain the upward trajectory of the Bobcats in the last couple of years? Because they did come from last place, the most miserable season in the history of the league, to where they ended up last year. What was responsible for the turnaround?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. One, we upgraded the talent. Al Jefferson, Kemba Walker's improved, MKG's improved. You know, we had a very good year last year because the guys got better internally, but also we upgraded the talent from a free agent standpoint. And a big change was the new coaching staff, Coach Clifford, mm-hmm. Coach Ewing, Coach Silas, Coach Price. And we also added a couple new assistants this year that we're excited about, Steve Hetzel and Pat Delaney, and Coach Bob Weiss is also with us. But coaches do a great job getting the guys prepared. They're very hard workers, very detailed, and the players sense that, and they've all bought in. And the other thing that we had last year was great camaraderie with the players and great locker room. And I don't think that can be understated. You have to have really good chemistry to play well.
When you talk about rebranding, rebranding experts say that the design stage of rebranding is the least expensive but most glamorous aspect of the process. So as a result, that stage receives a lot of attention from senior management because they want to be in on the glamour of it all, despite the fact that the real challenge comes in the implementation of the rebranding. And in basketball, I would imagine that the implementation has to include the team and how it continues to play. So how long will the enthusiasm that comes with the rebranding efforts and the new look and the new uniforms and the new bug, how long will that last if the team doesn't continue what it was doing last year?
Well, hopefully it lasts a while. I mean,
otherwise it's a lot of money misspent.
But we're excited about the season. We've got five new players. We feel like we've improved the team. We've got guys coming back, which is important to have the continuity. We've got a lot of guys that are already back in the gym working out here in Charlotte. And you can feel the energy and excitement in
it. Because according to the press release information that you guys are sending out, that this rebranding effort comes along with more aggressive efforts in the front office and on the court. What's that mean?
Well, I think, number one, it means we've got a really committed ownership group. And MJ's been great about, improving the team. And when we started out trying to build the team, one thing we wanted to do is bring in free agents, and he's committed to bringing them in, and we did that last year with Al.
We have to take a break. We'll come back. There's so much more to talk about. We'll do it in a second. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the 20th Annual Festival of India, starting at noon Saturday and Sunday at Belk Theater, with Indian food, art, dance, music, yoga demonstrations, and special exhibits. Details at indiafestival.net. And Creative Loafing's 27th Annual Best of Charlotte event, Friday, October 3rd at Wells Fargo Atrium Uptown, presenting a night of craft cocktails and food from the best of Charlotte area restaurants. Tickets at clclt.com. Voters in five states went to the polls yesterday in the last of the 2014 primaries. Diane Rehm and her guests will have analysis of the results and what they can mean for Democratic and Republican prospects in the November elections, coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. And if you'd like to talk about the brand new Charlotte Hornets, you can get to us through email at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. And we are coming right back.
All Things Considered offers a thorough and accurate perspective on the day's news. Mark Rumsey, Robert Siegel, Melissa Block, and Audie Cornish guide you through the day's events each weekday evening from 4 until 6:30 on WFAE. Stay connected to what's going on locally, nationally, and around the world by listening each day to All Things Considered on listener-supported 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the rebranding of the Charlotte Hornets, about to start in October with their new season as a new with a new name or an old new name or a new old name. Fred Whitfield is the president and COO and alternate governor of the Charlotte Hornets. Rich Cho is general manager, and Pete Goelli is executive vice president in charge of sales and marketing. Despite the fact that the Bobcats, after being the worst team in the league in the history of the league, sorry to bring that
you
up.
You have to keep bringing that up.
Despite the fact that you kind of turned them around and they went to the playoffs last year, the fortunes of the team as a business, I read, this actually surprised me, have lagged. Forbes reports that the Bobcats were the second least valuable team last year, finishing 28th out of 30 in terms of total revenue. And I'm sure that the operating costs here are lower than they would be in L.A. or New York, but the TV revenue is also less than it would. So how long can you keep this up and remain viable? I mean, what do you have to do to turn around the fortunes of the team? Is it winning more games? Is it selling more merchandise? Is the rebranding of the team going to sell more merchandise and fill the coffers up a little bit more?
Yeah, I think it's actually a combination of all of the above. You know, we've over the past 4.5, 5 years started to really turn our business around. Our fans are really connecting with us. We're growing our season ticket holder base. We're growing our sponsorship base. We're responsible for running and managing Time Warner Cable Arena. Mm-hmm. One of our revenue streams is booking our arena for concerts and family shows. And, you know, we'll have 100+ non-Hornets events in our building this year and every other year in the future. And, you know, what our team does for us on the court is really helps us become more and more relevant throughout this region. And we've really started to market our team as more of a regional team. And I think Michael, as our owner, making his investment a little over 5 years ago, has been really pleased in the direction that we've taken our organization from a financial standpoint. And we tried to build it the right way because we want sustained success. He knew there were going to be investments that needed to be made. The rebranding cost will be somewhere in the $4.5 million range. He vowed to invest in player talent.
But will there be revenues from those rebranding costs? I mean, obviously, if you're going to change everything, people are going to want to buy new T-shirts, new sweatshirts, new caps, new everything.
And new season tickets. Okay. And so, again, having our fans really not only ask for, but, follow up and support the rebranding change by buying tickets, by buying sponsorships, I think has certainly moved things in the right direction. But Michael also knew we had to invest in more talent. And he did that last year with Al Jefferson. He did again this year with Lance Stevenson. We made a hard run at Gordon Haywood and made him a significant offer that Utah matched. But we're trying to improve the talent level. We want to win. Our goal is to be in the top four in the East every year.
You know, football, we didn't used to have a football team when the Hornets were here, and that they were our everything. Now we have the Panthers, and football in America is the big dog. There's just no question about it, and TV made that happen, I think, over the years. The Panthers just won their season opener without Cam. That bodes well, it seems to me, for the Panthers. Do you hope that they continue to do well this season? Because you open yours preseason on October the 8th, or do you hope that they fall apart, giving people a chance to come see your games for some hope?
I think we take that high tide raises all boats philosophy. I mean, anything that's going on that's positive in Uptown Charlotte generates interest in professional sports. So I think we can all kind of benefit from the way the Knights performed this year, from the way the Panthers have performed. I think, you know, I have a little bit of a unique perspective. I spent 11 years working in the NFL for the Buffalo Bills before Fred convinced me to come down here and work for the Hornets. But you know, you can have multiple successful sports franchises in a market like Charlotte. Absolutely,
and we love the Panthers. You know, I've been a season ticket holder with them from day one. Okay. I think the Richardson family has done a phenomenal job in running a first class organization. We support them; they support us. Michael has a suite at Bank of America Stadium, and the Panthers have a suite in our arena and come out and watch us play. So we're certainly huge fans of theirs, and Danny Morrison and I have been friends for, you know, 25 plus years, and we're often sending each other supportive emails in hopes that we both can be successful.
Jennifer emails, one thing that would help attendance and get the community engaged and excited about the team would be to have more day games. We can rarely take our elementary school kids to games because they start so late. We'd love to be able to take our kids to a 2 p.m. or a 5 p.m. basketball game on Saturday or Sunday like we do with the Knights. Kids would be much bigger fans if they could go to more games.
Well, that's a great point. And, you know, one of the things that we've done since I've been here is identify one of our preseason games and make it what we call Cool School. And it's strictly for middle school students that we bring in from the community. And we have that coming up again this year. Our schedule did allow us to have a Sunday game, and we're going to have an earlier start time this year. Last year, we didn't draw any Sunday games. But we are very, very sensitive to that, and we understand what school nights are all about. One of the things that we were more hopeful for is to have more weekend games, which would allow more kids to come out. But as we get better and better on the floor, I think our schedule would become more and more favorable. But
the league sets the schedule, and the league has to be aware that you can't play a game on Sunday afternoon and during football season. Nobody will watch it.
Well, it's tough competition to do that.
It won't get on television either.
That's true. But what we've tried to create is a family environment. And, you know, when I first got here, you know, our goal was to, you know, have kids lined up along the rail, high-fiving our players as they went back to our locker room through our tunnel. There were none there 8 years ago. Now, when you come to our games, you see all the kids lined up. The kids are having a great time. It's a family environment. Parents are enjoying having their kids there in a positive feeling building. And those things aren't going to change. We're going to continue to make sure we resonate with the kids in the community and have our games be fun for the entire family.
I think, Rich Cho, you were with a team when the other owner was still here, right? Were you still here?
No.
No, you were not. Well, certainly Michael Jordan has made some changes in the last couple of years, which have directly affected you and what you do for the team. Talk about how that has changed what you do for the team and what the impact of that has been on the team and the success of the team.
Yeah, well, I mean, MJ's been a really committed owner. He's spent money on free agents like Al Jefferson, Lance Stephenson, but he's also invested in our staff. We've got four analytics guys now. We've got a couple basketball operations assistants. And, you know, the more staff you have and more committed you are to that operation, the better. We've also got an international scout, a pro scout, and five college scouts.
Is that unusual or is that normal for an NBA team?
Well, I think four analytics guys, that's a little on the high side, but it just shows how committed MJ
What will that do for you? What does that do for you?
Yeah, when you're looking at players and you're looking at spending millions of dollars on players, I want as much information on the player as possible. So everything on scouting reports, medical information, injury information, what do the numbers show? You know, we use an eyes, ears, and numbers approach. What does the scouting, the live scouting and video scouting show? What do the numbers show analytically? What do the numbers show? And then what's the ears? What's the intel on this guy?
It strikes me that I don't know anything about what you do, but it strikes me from hearing about what you do that you are a combination of a stock analyst and a juggler. If you were to hire somebody to do what it is you do, what would you look for in that person?
Well, I mean, I have a law degree and an engineering degree. I think that's a good background, from an analytical standpoint, because you're always analyzing things just between the draft, free agency, trades, contracts, contract negotiations. I think all that's a good background.
Yeah, because you're an analyst and you're a juggler. I just said it. The city of Charlotte is going to spend $27.5 million in capital improvements to Time Warner Arena, as well as making 10 years' worth of annual payments of $600,000 for ongoing maintenance. And I believe that the team and the Charlotte Regional Visitors Authority, which helps run the arena, had asked for nearly $48 million. So what does the city get for its $27.5 million plus $600,000 over 10 years each time, each year?
Well, what it is is an investment in an asset that the city owns. You know, we're trying to be the best stewards we can be of our arena. We're trying to have it be a huge economic stimulator for our region. And a study was done by a professor at the University of South Carolina, and his findings were that our arena drove $265 million of economic impact to Uptown Charlotte from folks outside our region just last year. And so we need our building to stay state-of-the-art. We have to be competitive. Our region wants more NCAA tournaments. They want more ACC tournaments. We want to bring an NBA All-Star game here.
But the building is 9 years old. How, and there are two newer arenas in the NBA. It's Orlando and
Brooklyn.
Okay. There are two newer arenas. How below the state of the art could we possibly be?
Well, what has happened is almost every other arena in the NBA has had a major renovation to it. Madison Square Garden is almost a brand new arena. They basically gutted it and only kept the roof. You've got two more new buildings scheduled to come online. Golden State is coming online. Sacramento is coming online with the new building, and there are other major renovations planned throughout the league.
So when you say state-of-the-art, what are you talking about?
Well, a lot of it is infrastructure. A lot of it is IT-driven. A lot of it is technology. A lot of it is enhancements to the entertainment spaces and the hospitality spaces. Our building is 9 years old. Nothing's really been done to it to give it a facelift. You know, HD technology now is in literally every arena throughout the NBA.
But not ours?
Well, it's not there fully, but it will be with our renovations. And, you know, we compete with Greensboro, my hometown. We compete with Raleigh for major concerts and family shows. Most major concerts and family shows only make one or two stops in the Carolinas.
Okay.
You know, our goal is to get every major concert and family show that hits the road to come to Time Warner Cable Arena.
So it's not just about basketball. It's about the fact that you run the arena for the city,
yes,
and book in other events who need certain things that we don't have unless we keep up.
Yeah, we compete with Greensboro and Raleigh heavily for those. And the
team, if I'm not mistaken, is also putting in $600,000.
Yeah, we've committed to make a $6 million investment as well over the next 10 years that we had no legal obligation to do. But Michael wanted to invest in the building. You know, he realizes that the building is where we play. But we also understand our obligation to have that building be an economic stimulator and really a place where, you know, everybody in our community from every demographic can enjoy, whether it's a high school graduation or college graduation or these concerts and family shows.
One of the things that you're doing, I'm told, is that you're upgrading the scoreboard.
We are.
But if we get, you're pitching the 2017 and 2018 All-Star game, and if we get that game, we're getting, the plan is, I'm told, to get a new scoreboard.
We will get a new scoreboard, and we'll also take the current scoreboard and repurpose those boards throughout the arena. Mm-hmm. And then we're also going to have HD monitors throughout the arena. You know, we just need some other general maintenance things with restrooms, with flooring, things that are just, you know, wear and tear over 9 years of 1 million people coming through our building every year for different events.
What does a new scoreboard bring you that you don't have the capability of doing now?
Well, I think more than anything else, that HD in-home experience. I mean, if fans expect it, it doesn't matter where you're sitting at a game, you want to feel like you're right in front of the action. And that HD scoreboard really brings those games to life for people sitting in the upper level, people sitting in the corners. There's an expectation that you're going to be able to, you know, view a game like you were at home.
So the idea of going to the arena in the 21st century is to be amongst the pulsing crowd, but to be able to watch it as though you were sitting at home with your 60-inch plasma.
That is absolutely correct. I think that's one of the reasons why the NBA has continued to be successful. In my experience, is the best in-person viewing sport that you can possibly attend. You're closer to the action, but they still want to have their technology at the ready. They still want to have replays at the ready. They still want to know what's going on in other games. They still want to interact with what's happening on the court, so you need the technology to do it.
Is it weird for coaches or players to be on the floor and to realize that everybody at the arena is looking up at the screen as they play? Is that weird?
I don't know if it's weird, but you know, fans. I mean, players. They recognize the building too, and they like playing in nice buildings. And as part of the renovation, we're renovating the locker room and some of the player areas. And players talk around the league, and I know our players are excited about the renovations.
What's the worst building in the league?
I think, you know, quite honestly, not to disparage anybody, but Sacramento probably needs a new building more than any other team. They've been in that building for quite some time. They're building a new one. But, you know, I wouldn't use the word worst. It's probably just not as updated as a lot of
buildings.
What's
the best building in the league?
You know, for me, I like what the Knicks did. I mean, they took an absolutely historic, iconic building and completely updated it to the tune of $1 billion. It is a spectacular experience when you walk into all that history, but then have all these new amenities. It's a very interesting place to see a game now.
And, you know, I like the Pacers building. They build a really unique field house environment, but the city of Indianapolis has invested $100+ million in keeping that building relevant and state of the art. And so they've got a very, very unique atmosphere in Indianapolis.
One of the things that the agreement between the city and the Hornets has, the states, is that the city will continue to provide a building that is among the league's most modern. Given the rapid change of technology and what the league does to keep up with that, that seems to be almost an impossible thing to accomplish, to keep up with being the best in the league.
Well, you know, what we've done in partnership with CRVA and the city is look at spreading our plan over the next 5 years. And then once the 5 years is up, we'll look at our building again and put together a long-range plan to continue having our building stay state-of-the-art. Well,
that was going to be my next question. How much longer can you play in that building before you're going to say we need a new building to play in?
You know, I think our building is situated in a place that has really, you know, allowed us to have the premier destination for sports and entertainment in the Carolinas. As long as we continue to take care of our building and invest in it, I think we have a chance to keep it running relevant for years to come.
Fred Whitfield is president and COO of the Charlotte Hornets. Rich Cho is general manager. Pete Guelli is the executive vice president and chief sales and marketing officer and in charge of the rebranding. Next time we get together, Michael should be here.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins.